Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. I am going to change the order of the presentations unless I see some activity towards the back there. We have a group that is serving us coffee and cupcakes in the back. I don't know that they are quite ready. We might have some assistance to let folks know that they'll be up pretty soon. So I would like to go ahead with the second presentation, and let's move to the proclamation for the Start by Believing Public Awareness Campaign. And if I could have of those many capable officers in the back, if you would let our STEPS program in the back serving coffee, let them know they're going to be on the agenda coming up here next thing, right after this presentation. I do have a proclamation to read, and I believe we have Jenny Adams here this evening. And I will go ahead and read this proclamation. This is one I feel necessary to read in its entirety, and then we'll ask Jenny for her comments. Start by Believing Public Awareness Campaign and Start by Believing Day, February 1, 2013. Whereas crimes of sexual assault have a devastating effect on the lives of victims, family members, and the community, the City of Atascadero is concerned for the welfare of sexual assault victims within our community and encourages victims of sexual violence to report those crimes to law enforcement. And whereas many victims of sexual assault are reluctant to report these crimes directly to law enforcement because of fear, humiliation, and embarrassment, when sexual assaults are unreported to law enforcement, the offender will likely repeat their crimes, causing further harm to victims, families, and communities. And whereas sexual assault victims often report these crimes directly to family members, friends, or loved ones, when family members, friends, and loved ones respond with doubt, shame, and blame, the victims suffer additional negative effects on their physical and psychological well-being. And whereas in 2012 there were 18 reports of rape or attempted rape made to Atascadero Police Department, the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention, SARP, advocates aided the City of Atascadero providing direct assistance and care to the victims of the sexual assault and worked alongside members of the Atascadero Police Department in the investigation and prosecution of the suspects in those cases. And whereas the Sexual Assault Recovery and Preventive Center has decided to bring awareness to the issue of sexual assaults and the need to support victims of sexual assault through the Start by Believing campaign, the Start by Believing campaign is designed to improve the responses of family members and friends, loved ones, and community professionals so they can help victims to assess supportive resources and engage the criminal justice system. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Atascadero, speaking on behalf of the citizens of Atascadero in recognition of the important work done by the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center, does hereby proclaim public support for the Start by Believing Public Awareness Campaign being launched on February 1, 2013. And thank you for coming out this evening and telling us a little bit about your program and this effort.
Thank you. I'm Jennifer Adams. I'm the executive director of the North County Women's Shelter and the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center, as we've recently merged, as most of you know. Thank you, Mayor O'Malley, the Atascadero City Council, as well as Chief Haley and the Atascadero Police Department, for recognizing the devastating impact of sexual violence in our community. By proclaiming February 1st, as Start by Believing Day in the City of Atascadero, we join with other neighboring cities, as well as the County Board of Supervisors, in launching a public awareness campaign designed to improve our response to sexual assault. The campaign is called Start by Believing because a friend or family member is typically the first person a victim confides in after an assault, and each person's reaction is the first step in a long path toward justice and healing. Knowing how to respond is critical. A negative response can worsen the trauma and foster an environment where sexual assault predators face zero consequences for their crimes. Research documents that rapists attack an average of 6 times, which means that 1 failed response can equal 5 more victims. Start by Believing will lead the way towards stopping this cycle by creating a positive community response, informing the public, uniting allies and supporters, and improving our personal reactions. The goal is to change our community and outcomes for victims, 1 response at a time. When the Start by Believing campaign has been launched in other communities, it has resulted in an increase in reported sexual assaults and survivors seeking services. The SARP Center, which recently merged with the North County Women's Shelter, is prepared to respond to services to survivors in our community. This newly merged organization serves both victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, as well as their loved ones. Both agencies have served the community for more than 30 years with services including 24-hour crisis lines, prevention education, restraining order assistance, safe houses, and counseling services. The campaign will officially launch on February 1st with the help of numerous criminal justice and community partners. Our goal is to reach every adult resident of the county with campaign materials, including posters and brochures, postcards and bookmarks, T-shirts and card magnets. We've even rented a roadside billboard to display the message of Start by Believing. Please visit us on the web or on the Facebook, or come by one of our offices in San Luis Obispo or Paso Robles to obtain materials. We hope that you will join us in this effort to end sexual violence in our community and start by believing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd invite you, and I would like to have our police chiefs come up in front of the dais, have our chief present this proclamation to you in case our newspaper would like to get a picture of that, and the council will join from behind the dais. Very good. And again, thank you for coming out. It's a very important program in our community. It's my great privilege to introduce another, organization in our community. Brian Sturtevant and I sit on a city schools committee made up of 2 council members and 2 school board members where we regularly meet to discuss how we can better work together. When we were there one time, we heard about the STEPS program, and I had to go over and visit some young folks doing a great job. And you may have met them this evening, serving coffee and cupcakes, doing a very good job. I'm going to turn it over to them. I believe we have Aaron Van Note, one of their leaders, is going to tell us a little bit about this program in our community, as well as present some of our workers. So welcome, STEPS program. How about a round of applause for our servers tonight? Now we do have and you may have something on screen. We do have a mic over at this end if you need that. Okay, I think we will get a mic aimed at you because we have a viewing audience out of sight of this building that would like to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely.
Please make sure you introduce yourself again and any names you reference here.
Sure. My name is Aaron Van. Can you hear me? Okay. My name is Erin Van Note, and I am the special education teacher over at the STEPS program. First, I just wanted to start off by saying good evening, everyone. I want to thank Mayor O'Malley and his staff for inviting the STEPS program to come serve and have our StepBucks coffee shop, which is our class business, participate. This has been a great opportunity for the members, as well as myself, to really feel like we are part of the Atascadero community. So thank you once again. The members here are eager to tell you about the STEPS program and the Stepbucks coffee shop. The acronym STEPS stands for Steps Into Transitioning for Education, Employment, and Personal Success.
The STEPS program teaches us about daily living skills.
We learn your skills.
We started a class business called Stepbucks Coffee Shop. We serve coffee, tea, hot cocoa, and apple cider.
We also serve pastries.
We buy groceries.
We cook queen.
We are independent adults learning how to transition into life beyond public school.
The STEPS program focuses on giving its members the skills or the chance to learn the skills needed to maximize their independence. This essential program includes person-centered practices, classroom-based training, community-based instruction and practice, and work experience.
We have provided some handouts out front that explain our program in more detail. We've also included the schedule of when our Stepbucks coffee shop is open to the community. Feel free to pick these up after the meeting. And once again, we would all like to say
thank you.
Very nice. You may.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for coming.
No problem.
And Rochelle, our finance director, lets you know they are actually making money. And they actually made these cookies themselves as well. So we're very glad you could come out this evening. Next on our agenda is Employee Service Awards. And Mr. McKinney, our city manager, will present those.
Mr. Mayor, as always, I'm excited to recognize our employees for continuous service. And we have some employees and some of you that have participated in the city for a long term, years at a time. But this is, we give service awards for continuous service. So let me first start with Mayor Tom O'Malley. Mayor Tom O'Malley has provided 10 years continuous service. That would be 2 years as a planning commissioner and then 4 years, or 8 years now, sorry, and a few months as a council member.
Well, that would be longer because it's actually been 10 years as a council member.
Oh, I'm sorry. 10 years, well then.
Well, I'm coming to get my
award. Yes, come and get your pin. Did you want to say something, Mr. Mayor?
Thank you.
As we all know, mayor has brought lots of energy to the city, and we certainly have appreciated the many things he's done. He's on a lot of boards, and he's positive, proactive, and productive, and we appreciate it. We also have two 15-year awards. First, let me introduce Michelle Shamber from the police department. Michelle was, I think, the first officer that joined the city after I joined the city as the city manager. We've been great. It's been great to have Michelle. She has virtually done everything in the department. I've been trying to get her to come to a meeting for quite some time, but she's working midnights and I work days, and she keeps telling me that that just doesn't work. But we really appreciate you being here, Michelle. She, as you know, is a corporal in the police department. She's done a variety of our positions, including the canine. Michelle's been a real go-to person and one of our really, really, really solid members of the police department. We really appreciate the teamwork that she brings to the organization and how she's worked with other departments. She communicates well, and she's one of our people we're really, really excited about. One of our practices at the city is when one of our employees is featured in a media. You know, we've had some people shown in a magazine, some people in a newspaper or other items. We make a presentation. We create a plaque, if you will. This is about our own teacher, Michelle, that was in the Atascadero News some time ago. And we frame these, and then we keep them up in the lobby of City Hall until our next official is featured in some new magazine or newspaper. And then we give the framed article to our employee. The next one, if you go look, is our own Chief Haley that was featured, and he's now in the lobby. I keep saying, you could just bring your family by the lobby and see. And I'm not sure if Michelle got to do that or not. But we do appreciate your 15 years of service, and here's your service award and the picture. Would you like to say something?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to just say that it's been an honor to serve the department and the community.
And the next one is our own Jim Campana. Jim has worked in the Public Works Department for some 15 years. Jim's built a bunch of things around here, and we do a lot with a little, and Jim is one of those people that has come to our organization that really can stretch the dollar, and he's challenged us in many ways. You got to know Jim Campana. The fun side of Jim is his daughter's playing softball. Jim's pretty much a lot of all work around here, and we convinced him at one time to be on our legendary public service or customer service committee. And some of you may remember when they did the cheer, Jim was the exclamation mark, and I don't know how they convinced him to do that, but he did that. But Jim truly, in all seriousness, is the guy that brought our internal paving crew to the city. Jim has a lot of personal expertise in the public works area. He actually came up with the idea of purchasing the paving machine and extending our dollars. So now for more than 10 years, we've been paving roads with our own crew. We try to find roads where it's a local road that wouldn't otherwise get fixed, where we can do the traffic control and we can really extend our dollars. This is just one example of the cool things that Jim has brought to the department. Jim is a terrific member of our team and awesome at the customer service committee. Thanks.
Thank you, Wade. Thank you very much for the kind words. It's truly been my pleasure, and I'm very grateful to be able to serve the citizens of Atascadero, serve the present and past city councils. I would like to give a special thanks to Wade and Rochelle for your foresight and you're looking ahead and saving for the rainy day to have us in a place where we're at today financially. And then I would also like to thank Russ Thompson, our public works director, who happens to be my boss, but he is just very knowledgeable. He's straightforward and a very fair person. If I have a question, I have a need, I can go to Russ and I can have an answer by the time I leave the room, which is very helpful. Last of all, I hate to draw this out. Last of all, I'd like to thank my wife. My wife has put up with those calls from dispatch over the last 15 years at 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'd just like to thank her. And thank you very much for the recognition.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, they got them all to smile. Paul, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next thing on the agenda is the consent calendar. First, are there any council members wishing to pull an item?
I'd like to pull number two.
Number two, which is the fiscal year 2011-2012 audit. Any member of the public wishing to pull a consent calendar item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council and ask for a motion on remaining consent calendar items.
So moved.
Second.
A motion by Councilwoman Fonzie. I believe it was seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We'll next take up consent calendar item number two. Councilman Kelly, what are your questions?
Rochelle, I was wondering if you could bring up the financial report on the internet and go to page number 52 of the report, or it's page 81 of the whole agenda package. Oop, can't see.
Well, Bob, if you can read that, we're giving you an award, too.
Well, I brought some copies along because all I got to do is find them now. Here we go. If you want to just pass these down. Because I figure it might be hard.
I got mine on the screen.
And yeah. There seems to be a conflict with some numbers with that page there that came out on the internet to us and the handout that we've all received. If you want to go to your handout of the financial statement and go to page 52 along the compensated absences line, you'll see there's a different set of numbers there. And I was just kind of curious of where some of the numbers went.
Councilmember Kelly, where are you looking at in the audit report?
Be page 52 in the financial report.
No.
Well, we will pretty soon here.
I believe Councilman Kelly is referring to the line on compensated absences, and he is correct. There appears to be an error in the printed version. What has happened in the past is the compensated absences, the net change, has always been reported, and it's always been the net. Recent changes to governmental accounting standards has now asked that we change the disclose the full additions, how much we spent in leave, less any deletion. So if you net those two numbers on the internet, you'll end up with the 111,000 reported in your printed version. We were getting these. This was the very last minute change that we received from the auditor, and apparently there was an error in getting it in the printed copies. We will make sure that all of the audits are corrected and that you do have the correct page on that. I apologize.
One other question is, I got a copy of the long-term compensated absences, and there's a number on that of $1,686,578 and some cents, dated June the 30th. And the other number here of 600, is that correct? Yeah, and then the number in the handout was $1,674,976. There's a slight difference there. Is that something that should be corrected to?
It's not a material correction, and in fact, it may have already happened. The number in the audit report is correct. Those are worksheets that we give to the auditors. They may have found a $300 or $500 error, if I'm hearing the number right, and just switched it for the financial reports.
Would it be appropriate then for the auditors to actually, we have two reports that have been signed and approved by the auditor with different numbers. Should we get an addendum from the auditor to see which one of these pages is the correct page to go in the report?
That would not be typical. They gave an opinion on the report that's on the council on the website, so that would be the correct one. The page that's incorrect here is just a copying error.
Right.
So we can do that.
They've also approved that, I think, for their own justification. Should they be made aware that there should only be one page?
We could tell them that we made a copying error and copied the wrong page and distributed that, but that we were correcting it.
Okay.
I don't think it would significantly matter to them. In fact, they said we didn't have to disclose the total additions and deletions this year, but that that's would be better form if we did.
Okay.
So I think they'd be comfortable with either page, but I will let them know that the copied page was incorrect.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions on the audit report? I'll open it to the public. Is there any member of the public question or comment on fiscal year 2011-2012 audit? Welcome, Mr. Bentz.
Yes. May I pass something to the city council?
Get it to our city clerk and she'll distribute it.
My name is David Bentz. I live in 3F Meadows. I'm requesting that this letter and two attached spreadsheets on the general fund be entered into the record for the City Council meeting on Tuesday, January 22nd, 2013. The spreadsheet on page salaries, wages, overtime, other pay, and fringe benefits shows an alarming trend over the last 13 fiscal years. Salaries and fringe benefits for fiscal year 2011-2012, which is this report that you're approving or that you have scheduled to approve tonight, consumed 74.26% of the general fund expenditures. There are a number of cities that have filed for bankruptcy, and all of those cities were paying 70% or more of the general fund resources for salaries and fringe benefits. Atascadero has been experiencing more than 70% for the last five fiscal years, including this report tonight. The percentages were performed by me. The percentages have been double-digit increases for 6 years of the 13 years. The increases in salaries and fringe benefits have significantly exceeded the consumer price index for each of the fiscal years. The spreadsheet clearly shows where the money was used by each department. The spreadsheets for the general fund, operating revenue and expenditures, shows 23 years of actual operating revenue and operating expenditures by departments. Once again, those numbers come from official city audited statements. The spreadsheet also shows the percentage of increases and decreases for the 23 years. The last 5 years shows the general fund has had significant deficits. This spreadsheet clearly shows where the increases have been allocated into what departments. The city of Atascadero is currently using 74 cents of every dollar in the general fund for salaries and fringe benefits, with only 26 cents of every dollar for services, supplies, and capital outlay. I believe that the city council should direct city staff to reduce that mix of 74 cents and 26 cents to 60 cents and 40 cents for future budgets. The city council should adopt this action to guarantee the sustainability of the general fund to have sufficient resources to maintain adequate services to the citizens of Atascadero. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Council. My name is Mike Brenler. I'm a resident of Atascadero. And I'm sorry I walked in when this presentation was made. I was curious what page number that was, if I could just learn that, just to jot it down.
52.
Thank you. And then I wanted to, I don't know if this can be answered, but I wanted to bring to your attention a couple of things. I'll refer to page numbers on this same report. Page number 74, under the city attorney contract services, appears that it's been a pretty significant increase, about 29.55% from the original to the final. That concerns me. I don't know necessarily what, you know, what would spur that type of an increase. Under administrative services, page 75, it was my understanding that there were no salary increases in the past couple of years in lieu of the problem, you know, the problematic economy that we have. And yet I see an increase of approximately 5.80% for salaries and benefits. I don't know if we picked up another employee or what the circumstance was there. And I just, I don't know if Rochelle could explain that or not now. Perhaps she can explain it later. And then the other anomaly that it appears an anomaly to me is that in the contingency fund for the city manager and under expenditures, it was originally budgeted at $100,000 and the final came out at $64,520. I'm trying to determine if that $64,000 figure is an actual expenditure and what that was, you know, what that was applied to. My gut is that it probably went to these vacation accruals that I railed against last year, in my opinion, still hasn't been resolved properly, and it's even mentioned in this report as well. But if you can answer, fine. Otherwise, I can call. Whatever's easy.
Thank you. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach on this consent calendar item, we will close public comment, bring it back to council for any further questions or discussion. We can hear from staff if they would like. My understanding, of course, is that looking at a percentage of the budget for salaries and benefits, we are in the service industry. We are providing services. We're paying for policemen, firemen, folks that manage the sewer plant. Those are primarily positions doing services. So my experience is that that may not be so unreasonable, but maybe you could speak to that in light of what Mr. Bintz's question was. My understanding is on our budget projections as well, we've been looking at that. I think sometimes people use the word deficit, and I do want to make sure folks understand we are not borrowing money to operate from a day-to-day basis. We are reducing our savings. We've set money aside in the good years to get through times like this, which has been tough for economies. So we are drawing down reserves, but they were set aside specifically for this purpose, is my understanding, and we're monitoring that and making adjustments as we go. So that's my simplistic overview. I asked staff to maybe provide a little more reference on that. And as far as any of the other more particular items, if you can address them, I would ask that you do that at this time. I would also remind council members and the public, we are always open for business in terms of emails and phone calls, and often I have questions myself as I go through these reports. In fact, just this afternoon, I sat down with Rochelle a couple questions I had, and she answered them. And if she couldn't, well, I'd expect her to come with an answer tonight. So that will help us be more responsive to your needs and questions if you pass those on to staff as soon as you can, and they'll have a more timely response. But in any case, I think some of these are routine questions. Maybe you could address any of those that, or please clarify if I misstated anything.
Thank you, Mayor. You are absolutely correct about personnel. We are a service organization. In particular, the general fund itself is a service fund. This is where you pay for your policemen, your firemen, your parks workers, your finance people, all of those things that you need to do to provide service to the community and to provide the protection and the facilities that the community needs. 73%, 74%, anywhere between, you'll see anywhere between, 65, 70, up to 80% for a full service city will be spent on personnel for the most part. We're right in the norm. You will find some cities that do have less, but typically that's where they've contracted out a large piece of their services. So they may contract with the sheriff's department to provide police services or contract with Cal Fire fire services. And so what that does is it switches that down into that operating expense. So yes, we are a service industry. Yes, the cost of employees have been increased. Yes, we do compete with the public market for employees and have paid and dealing with all of the cost increases that everybody is. I think that, yes, we are not deficit spending. We have reserves on hand. We are very judiciously looking at how much of those reserves we want to spend in this downtime. This is a planned action. The council has planned for the last 15 years to put away money in good times so that you would spend it in bad times, and that is exactly what the fiscal plan has been doing, and that is exactly what we have been doing. We'll spend a lot of time tonight going through that plan, talking about what is the appropriate amount of reserves to be spending in the next 2 years. When do we think that we're going to start putting away money again? Are we spending too much in reserves? Are we not spending enough in reserves? Because you don't want to reduce community services, reduce services to the employee, only to have your revenue come up again, and then you have to hire and bring those programs back. It's not good for the organization. We'll spend quite a bit of time on that. I think there were some city attorney. The city attorney's fees did go up. Last year was 2011 was an exceptionally low year. We didn't have a lot going on. We didn't need a lot of services. And Brian and his team did a wonderful job of keeping the expenses down in 2011. They did just as wonderful a job in 2012, but there was a lot of things going on. In particular, we spent a lot on personnel attorneys writing those rules and regulations. There's a lot of personnel law, and there was a lot that went into that. Kelly Treanor and her team did a fantastic job. It does cost money, unfortunately. I think we were also, Brian and his team spent quite a bit of time on the EIR ahead of time for Walmart, trying to make sure that we're meeting and dotting all the I's and crossing all those T's. If you have anything else you might know on that.
I think the dissolution of redevelopment has required a lot of legal services as well.
That's correct. The city manager's contingency, we budget $100,000. That's not for the city manager. In fact, very rarely is that money spent in the city manager's department. That is a citywide contingency where the city manager has basically control over that. It is distributed out to all of the departments that may need it. If a fire engine breaks down and we weren't expecting that, that can be a very expensive fix, $20,000 or more. Those types of things. So what that shows is that we budgeted $100,000. We had $64,000 left of that contingency that we did not spend during the year. So we did spend $36,000. I don't have off the top of my head where exactly that $36,000 went, but I could get Mr. Brendler, if he's truly interested, I can get him those numbers.
Just so we make sure we're clear on that, so there was $100,000 budgeted. You basically came in under budget, only spent $36,000. That wasn't spent in the city manager's office. It was not used for taking care of any personnel, accrued leave, or any of those kind of questions that have been raised. It was used for some unbudgeted expense, let's say fire department, police department, or something. It's under the city manager's discretion with that amount of budget leeway.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
Administrative services department, again, we were looking at salaries. We have not received salary increases. The administrative services department had a lot of overtime this year, and we did actually hire a part-time person in to help. With the dissolution of redevelopment and all of the reports that were required for that, along with several other things going on in the department. I believe that's part of where Wade's contingency went, was to help out and try and do that. So we've had the administrative services team have been here a lot of hours, and that kind of did it. There's also some step increases in there. Employees are still entitled after a year of service, their first few years of service, to receive a step increase.
Is that any other staff response to these questions before we see if there's some more questions?
I believe I addressed them all, but if there's one that I missed, I'd be happy to try and answer it.
Well, let me preface by saying we welcome council questions and community questions. If you've got a question, probably someone else has a similar question, and it helps make sure we really understand some of the details. And if you're got a microscope like Bob Kelly and can spot something that say, well, we want to get even those discrepancies cleared up. So that's very helpful. Thank you for taking that time. Mr. Kelly, more questions?
Well, just comments, really. I'd like to comment about the contingency factors. I know in the past that the police, fire, and other departments have got contingencies, and I was just looking at page 75, and I don't believe any of them have been spent, if I'm reading this report right.
You're still in the audit report?
Yes, it's page 75, 76. It's 75, you can go down there. The police department had a $10,000 contingency. It looks like they didn't spend any. Fire department had 10. I don't believe they spent any, according to this report. Is that correct?
Actually, that's just a little bit different. What that shows is there is no such thing as a contingency expenditure. If the fire engine breaks down or the police car breaks down, we don't report that in contingency. Instead, what we do is we transfer the budget from contingency up to vehicle repairs and maintenance. So if you look that first line item on police, they have a $10,000 contingency. And then the second final number, you'll see they have zero. So what that means is they had to transfer all $10,000 of that up to different line items within their budget to cover unexpected items that occur during the year.
Well, then, contrary to my thought, it all got used. All right.
Yes. We made it. We spent it.
I tried.
There you go. Well, thank you for your thoroughness. Now, of course, this is just reviewing one audit report. This is coming up on the beginning of a two-year budget cycle. So our council is going to be spending a lot of time reviewing the budget in even more detail than tonight. We'll have a lot of budget discussions coming up this summer. So be sure, if you have questions, this is a good time to bring them up, getting ready for that budget process. If you have questions, get them in to any of us or Rochelle, and we'll work that into the process of making sure those questions are answered. So thank you. No other questions. I look for a motion on this item.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion?
Yes.
As a formality, I would feel more comfortable before voting on this if we did get a reply from the auditors, because we do have basically two reports here. We have the one report that came out with the page with some information on it, and another report with a page with different information, and I think we owe it to the auditors to let us know that everything is correct and in order.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the numbers were quite immaterial, and so from an audit perspective, there's a materiality issue, and I'm not sure if they've told Rochelle what the correct one is, and they've signed off on it, and there's just a copying error.
Let's get into a dialogue at the moment. We have a question on the floor. I'd like to ask staff to respond first, then we'll take input from council. So question by Councilman Kelly. I think you responded already, but would you restate that?
Certainly. The numbers on the audit, the printed version versus the version on the internet, the difference is a net number versus a gross number, showing the additions and deletions. It is something that the auditors asked us to do for full disclosure this year. We will correct the ones to match the one on the internet. It was not something they had a problem with the net number, just a suggestion to report the gross numbers. I can't imagine that they would have any problem. The $500 difference on the different line is probably just an error in the spreadsheet. Again, it's definitely not material. Their materiality level is up around $150,000, not $500. So they wouldn't even have us change it for that. If the council feels more comfortable, we could have them come back. I know you're not going to hear anything different.
We'll consider that. So it's a question of materiality, and what we get from the audit is their conclusion, and this is not material enough to impact their conclusion in your CPA opinion.
That is correct.
Thank you. We also have a councilwoman, also a CPA. What is your opinion on this?
I would definitely defer to Rochelle on that. In terms of materiality, $500 would be really nothing from an audit perspective.
Okay. Any further discussion? We do have a motion on the floor, so if there's not further discussion, I'll act on that motion. But further discussion? Seeing none, I'll ask for a roll call vote.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
I'll abstain.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And again, we will have a lot of opportunity to review budget detail this coming summer. Next on the agenda is updates from the city manager.
Mayor and Council, on the same item that you've been talking about, we're working on our strategic planning program right now. Tonight you'll hear about finance and labor issues, and this Friday, 5 o'clock, we'll begin the strategic planning workshop, and we'll go through Saturday as well. People can find more particular, I think the notice information is out and available on our website and out in the public. The second thing I want to remind you and bring up again, I hope everybody has a chance to attend the Joe Schwartz event. 2013, as you know, marks our centennial, both for Atascadero and for Joe Schwartz. And so we're going to celebrate. Joe is a world-famous photographer who lives here in Atascadero. So Tuesday, February 12th, at the council meeting, we will have a presentation about Mr. Schwartz, a little bit about his history, what he's done by one of the professors at Cal Poly, and a little sampling of his photography. On Wednesday, the City Council will be hosting from 5 to 8 a reception here at City Hall with wine, food, and music. It'll be good music, not me singing or anything. and we're really looking forward. I believe we will have around 50 pieces of his work up. Cal Poly is helping us. We'll also have some historic photos from the Historical Society, and I think a display from the Historical Society. So there's some real, it's going to be a great reception on Wednesday. Also on Wednesday, and there will be some video here that they've done about Joe. But in addition to that, at 8 o'clock, as our reception winds down, there will be a Joe Schwartz film fundraising event at Galaxy Theater where there will be tickets sold over there, and they will be showing some movies where Joe is featured and talk a little bit about Joe's life. So it should be a really great event Wednesday night, both at our reception and at Galaxy Theater. On Thursday and Friday, we will have the art show right here in the council chambers so people can drop by. Opening at 12 noon. We are trying to make it available at odd hour or off hours for the schools if they were able to bring some classes through to see Joe's work and some of the history he brings to us in a variety of areas, especially in civil rights. And then Friday, some of our partners will have special receptions for Joe Schwartz at the Envisions and Olive Tree galleries, and there will be wine tasting at the Barrel Room, and Sylvester's is going to offer a Joe Schwartz burger.
All right.
So we have a full week that week of Joe Schwartz events, and we're really excited about kicking off our centennial, participating with the Centennial Committee and having a really fun week. The Transit Center is really shaping up, as you've seen. The past week, the pilasters have been done, the stucco is getting wrapped up, the road was striped, benches installed. Today, the landscaping crew installed the remaining plants, and the main work outstanding is the PG&E decorative streetlights and shelter signage and shelter lights that will also occur. We're expecting the parking lot to be restriped and cleaned up later this week. While the project is a little behind schedule, it is still on budget, and we hope to have the ribbon cutting in the next few weeks. And then lastly, a reminder, the Planning Commission Climate Action Plan meeting. A special meeting is next week, next Tuesday, January 29th at 7 p.m. The Planning Commission will be holding a special meeting to review the Air Pollution Control District's Climate Action Toolbox. The commission will review and discuss each of the potential greenhouse gas reduction measures and eventually make a recommendation to the city council. We expect the council to see the recommendation from the planning commission probably sometime in March. Due to the public's interest in the issue, we will be videotaping the planning commission meeting. And that's my update.
Thank you. We'll now move on to community forum. Community forum is reserved for persons wanting to address the city council on any matter not on the agenda and over which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. We have turned on the sound timer to assist speakers in knowing when their time is up. Please state your name for the record before making your comments. Welcome.
Yes, I'm Pastor Tom Farrell from Tascadero Bible Church, again representing the Ministerial Association. Pleased to be here with the City Council and to offer a prayer. Again, it's a delight to be able to see the awards handed out to some of our employees and hear from their perspective, their appreciation, having worked here for such a long time, the people that they work with. Again, it's great to see an inside look at that. And appreciate everybody is doing everything they can to save money, including our city manager now as the new photographer. I noticed that he was taking pictures, and appreciate, Wade, you doing your part, too. So I'm sure the pictures aren't going to be very good, but you're trying. I appreciate that a lot. So, again, also, I do appreciate the accountability that the public has here in reviewing things and asking questions. I think that's always healthy. And I appreciate the civil manner in which they've done so. So it's good to be a part of a city where you know, people are accountable and, you know, everybody's trying to do their best. So let's pray. Lord, I thank you so much for this community that we love. And you've blessed Tascadero in so many ways, including, Lord, that we're solvent through a very difficult time financially. We appreciate the public servants that have been alluded to tonight, not only those who've received awards, but the heroes that get the calls in the middle of the night and respond to our needs. I just pray for safety for them. Lord, I would ask, God, that you would protect them. And Lord, we know that there are unstable people out there that desire to harm others, and you just never know when that might occur. We're so aware of it nationally. We pray for protection for our own community. God, we would pray for protection for our own schools and just the public places that are vulnerable. And Lord, we just ask for protection for them as well. And those who serve us, be with them. I pray for the city council as they enter into this budget cycle. Important decisions going to be made, and that they would be not only responsible but have wisdom as well. And be good stewards of the resources that they have. We're grateful for everything you've given us. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you. Well, my old high school English teacher, welcome.
The only thing accurate in that statement was old. I'm Lon Allen. I'm here on behalf of the Atascadero Kiwanis Board of Directors. As of this Friday, the bandstand should be about 65% complete. We started applying the exterior siding today, and the rough wiring is expected to be done tomorrow. We've been waiting for about 3 weeks on some canisters. So we're to the point of what to name it. Now, I had a wonderful suggestion for naming it, but none of the board liked it, and I took it a little hard, but seems how it can't be named the Lon Allen Bandstand. We believe that a good name for this, when we dedicate this come the big centennial week, October of this year, we would like to ask the city council to take the name Centennial Bandstand and move that through the system and see if that can be done. And we appreciate any concern.
The past year, trying to get all the plans ready to go and start the festivities. This is a year-long project that we're working on to celebrate the 100 years of the Tascadero. There's a lot of great events coming up, and our annual dinner was the first one. One of the things I brought tonight was we have some items that will be the committee has come up with. We have a centennial coin that is now available at the chamber office. This goes to this again is the centennial community committee that's put this together. There's 100 coins for this. They're beautiful. They're a bronze, and they're available at the chamber office. And then also we've completed the centennial t-shirt, and we have a couple colors of those, and those are available also. So we want the community to be a part of the celebration throughout the year. The t-shirts are $20, and we're just excited to next celebrate the Joe Schwartz in February. And we invite you to check out the website at the chamber, atascaderochamber.org or atascaderocentennial.org for more information on all the ongoing events in town. Thank you.
Thank you. An excellent job on your last event, and thank you for all your work on the centennial planning. Welcome, Councilman Clay.
Yeah, Mayor O'Malley and Council. I had a couple of items that I wanted to address. Before I left the council, there was rumbles about taking the Planning Commission to 5 versus 7, and I'd hope that you wouldn't do that. Over the years, that's something that's come up all the time, and I think it's important to have 7 people. I've seen Planning Commission meetings that were down to 4. Believe me, they don't get paid. And there's a perception, you know, if you appoint someone, they're somehow endeared to you. So if you have 2 at large, that makes a difference. So I'd hope that you would not do that. Also, I heard a rumble that the Recreation Commission was going to be disbanded, and I think that's a bad idea, too. I think the more people you have involved in more citizens you have involved in your community government, the better. And you have some great people on the Recreation Commission, Susan DiCarlo, Dave May. Bob Pittenger was my appointee. And, you know, I'd like to say a few words about Bob, a person that really likes kids. When their kids go through the program, they stay in it. And his kids went all through, and he stayed with Babe Ruth for a number of years. And the Pittenger family goes back to the mid-30s. Also Dennis Schmidt, and 100% support for the police department to deal with this heroin problem that we have. And a lot of people don't want you to say heroin because it's a bad reflection on the community, but these scumbags are bringing this stuff in and killing our kids, and we're losing about 1 a month, and they're usually in their 20s and so on. So the Lighthouse Project is trying to address it at the high school level, and we've got to put a stop to this. That's all there is to it. So hopefully you can give that support. In Santa Maria, they had another shooting, unfortunately, and you know, I heard that they just used bean bags, and I know we have a whole lot of stuff, so, you know, pepper spray and all that kind of stuff. So I encourage the police, they get in those situations, to hopefully not have that happen. Excuse me here a minute. Got to write stuff down when you get to be my age, you know. Okay. All right, give me just another second to... in regards to the restaurants, you know, A-Town Deli opened up at the Carl's thing, and it's great. The service is good. Their food is outstanding. So I'd encourage people to go there. El Compadre, Joe Domenico and I went in today, and I had a fish burrito that was to kill for, believe me, and it was great. And then we went to the little yogurt creation in the Dolby Plaza, and we had some yogurt. So let's keep supporting these local restaurants, and let's keep supporting these local businesses. And thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Mark Spoomer. I'm just curious. I have some friends who and I were wondering when you might be breaking ground on the Walmart.
Well, we have some friends wondering that, too. Is that your only question?
Yeah, sorry,
well,
yeah.
We will address that at the close of public comment.
Okay.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Karen Sturdivant from Atascadero Main Street. I want to thank everybody who attended our recent mixer and let everybody know we have another mixer coming up March 14th. But between now and then, it's time for our annual Sweetheart Stroll, February 9th from 1 till 4. And our next mixer will be March 14th. And we haven't, I don't know, oh, it's, excuse me, it's going to be at Envisions Gallery. So it's usually after work. We have food. There is, again, will be wine. It seems to be a theme of ours. So come on out and join the downtown local businesses, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Well, before you run off, I wanted to make sure I heard that right. February 9th?
February 9th, 1 to 4. That's a Saturday afternoon.
And that'll be the Sweetheart Stroll. And where are the dancing lessons at?
In the Carlton.
Okay, very good.
In Colby Jacks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I hope Karen can find someone to take her out to the main street.
I hope so, too.
Any other public comment? I wasn't sure if you were, which way you were going there. It looks like we can, oh, we have another taker. Welcome.
Good evening. Thank you, Donald Cross, Tascadero. I was wondering if there was any consideration given to the not only audio, but video system that's going to be in place for the new city council chambers. I'd like to be able to read those numbers, you know, when we have accounting issues up there. And I haven't heard anything mentioned about it. And I was wondering if there was any planning going into that or any funds set aside.
Thank you. Very good question. Anyone else approach? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. Who wants to take on the Walmart question? City manager, where are we at?
Well, what we do know is that it goes to trial March 19th in the case that's been filed by Save Atascadero versus City of Atascadero. We're not sure following that when the judge would render decision. We'd certainly be hopeful the next day they would break ground, but that's not likely. The judge will take some time, and then we're told there's probably several months for them to complete their grading plan before they would submit once the legal portion is done. So we still need to finish the court case and see if there was an appeal.
Thank you. And the other question, which I think have heard before, I don't know if you're prepared to speak tonight, it would certainly be good to follow up on, what are we looking at for audiovisual support in the new council chambers?
We are working on that as we speak. We do have an audiovisual consultant as part of the reconstruction project for City Hall. So we hope to bring those issues out, both audio and visual, to make sure that our presentation abilities in the new building last for many years in the future.
Thank you. Well, that concludes Community Forum. We do not have any public hearings on the agenda tonight. We will move on to management reports. First one is the 2013 Community Development Block Grants. And I believe there's been some changes. We'll get a little explanation on where we are tonight. And we have certainly had this on the agenda before. You might remind folks where we are in the process sequence.
Sure. Thanks, Mayor O'Malley. Yes, tonight we're proposing to approve or asking the council to approve the final 2013 grant funds for CDBG. There is a correction. There is a correction to the staff report on the first page under the recommendation. The proposed funding amounts are correct, but underneath, down at the bottom where it says sources of CDBG funds on your staff report, it talks about prior year reallocations. And
what page is that?
That's on page 45 of the staff report. So that number we're at 79,988 should be 24,988, and that reduces the total to 154,988, and I'll go back and give you a little explanation. So each year the process starts with a workshop and different applicants for the grant funds can apply for CDBG funds. It is a HUD, federal HUD program used to help low-income individuals and programs. And so each year we get applications and we go through them from the different groups, and those are from a initial workshop with the public, and then those are brought to the City Council as we did in November of last year. And that's your opportunity or the Council's opportunity to evaluate those different proposals, and they're all worthwhile causes, but we have to sort through them and decide which programs we're going to fund. So in November of last year, the council, approved these draft fund amounts for the different groups, which include administration each year. That is for city staff costs to administer the CDBG program, and that goes to help offset staff costs for doing the work involved each year with that. So this year, the recommendations are as shown on this graphic, so this would be the final recommendation for tonight. The only change is, and the reason for the numbers were off, was that back in 2011, 2012, North County Connection was funded $55,000 for the purchase of the property on Atascadero Avenue. They're continuing to have difficulties meeting the CDBG criteria. Early on, and working with county staff, it was felt that they were not going to be able to meet the CDBG requirements because of their confidentiality issues and not wanting to disclose who the participants in their program were. So we initially thought that money was going to come back to be reallocated. So the change in the staff report is the staff's recommendation would be to allow them the extra time between tonight and when the Board of Supervisors approves the funding, that they may be able to work something out with the county CDBG people. So our recommendation is to not redistribute those funds, and if they can't meet those requirements, then we'll come back later in the year with a follow-up action to clean that up. Let me go back a little bit. But in this tonight, there is part of the funding is $130,000 in estimated funds for 2013. It also includes $24,988 from prior years. These are just savings, kind of little odds and ends from getting projects done a little cheaper than we thought we were. And not fully expending the funds, and so those funds have come back and are being redistributed tonight. And we talked about North County Connection. So really, that's tonight. You would open up for a public hearing or public comment on the proposed actions, and we're here to answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll begin. First, I want to thank Councilman Fonzie, who, you know, we were looking at this and had some questions about the report, and I think your questions helped staff with the presentation maybe be a little clearer.
And I just want to say good evening to the council and the mayor, and I want to thank you for allowing us to have this extra time to try to fit this funding in and see what other types of government bureaucracy that we need to address, and that's just was really a specific problem with that piece, and we'll see what we can do to rectify that and come up with it. We really want to see a huge need in this community for the transitional housing, and you'll be seeing some action out of us within the next couple months, and as we bring a plan to you with what we're going to be doing, and hopefully this funding will help to get that offset. And to let you know, the final appraisal came in. The bank has accepted it, and we are just awaiting the loan documents to finalize the mortgage loan with Rabobank.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Bill Watt. I'm the executive director of ECHO. I wanted to say that I appreciate the funding recommendation. It'll help Echo a lot. Although I've only been there 6 months, the board has been very thorough in expressing the ongoing support that Echo's received from you all. And so I just wanted to say thank you and for the current funding. Thank you for the future funding. But also, one of the reasons I've been able to get up to speed so fast has been the support of the city staff. And so I want to thank them for that. The police chief, everybody's been real helpful. It's an exciting time for Echo. This is a nice boost, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, Jenny Adams again, North County Women's Shelter Executive Director. And I just wanted to say again, thank you for the ongoing support. The home, the shelter that the city has partnered with the North County Women's Shelter in maintaining, it is only through this ongoing support that we have kept that house up to par and been able to continue to house about 120 mothers and their children each year with about 7,000 bed nights. So we fully appreciate that. I just wanted to comment, I usually attend the meetings and given kind of a precursor of what I'm going to be asking for, two different living rooms and two separate living spaces. So there's bedrooms on both sides and then two different living rooms. And the duct system that was put in at the time apparently is what is causing the huge problems with our utility bills in the winter being excessively high and then also with the air conditioning. And we did get three quotes, and two of them, they both came in around $21,000, $22,000. One was recommending a total replacement of the heating air unit itself. And the other was recommending a system that actually divides the house into two so that it, when we're not full and we only have residents in one side, we can choose to only support that one side of the house. But both recommended a full replacement of the duct systems, that they're not large enough to feed the entire house. And so I appreciate the... you know, the, what we were able to get done this year, and if we need to, we'll have to split it into 2 years and do maybe the duct system in one and the unit replacement or in the second one. So, again, thank you for your ongoing support, and I appreciate the opportunity to explain a little bit more about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council for any questions or discussion or motion.
I would just like to comment on Mrs. Warren's. Having sit on the housing committee, it's been as close to a nightmare as you can get, trying to wind your way through the bureaucracy, and so you have the patience of an angel. And I want to thank Tony Navarro down at the county. He's gone beyond to try to help to work this out, and I'm glad that we're giving them the additional time because they really do deserve it, and it's the bureaucracy is incredible. But I'd just like to comment that, you know, we're behind you, Sue.
Yes, we are. Thank you, Councilman Kelly. Councilwoman Fonzie.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept staff's recommendation as revised with the figures shown on the screen.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Kelly. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Murray?
You all took your no-dos, and we can go through this. The item you have before you is the 2013 Strategic Planning Update and the Comprehensive Financial Strategy. The strategic planning is an annual council process to identify long-term goals and priorities. This strategic planning process actually has several legs to it. It started with Russ's road program that you guys received in December or November. Warren did a wonderful presentation last council meeting, and then I'm going to go ahead and hit the finance portion tonight. It is an informational item. You will be making any decisions on these items at your January 26th strategic planning this Friday and Saturday. So this is just informational tonight. I'm going to give you the end first. Basically, this has been a huge economic downturn, unlike anything we've seen before. It's had worldwide implications. This is not something that would be in a normal planning strategy type of thing. The city does have a comprehensive financial strategy, and that the comprehensive financial strategy changes from year to year. As the economy changes, as the environment changes, the idea of the plan is to change and react with actual results, and that's what your comprehensive strategy does. We have, over since this downturn, reduced staffing, we've reduced operations, and we've reduced some investments that we have in our long-term assets. The recovery has started, but it'll likely be very slow, very long, and very drawn out. There's differences of opinion from different economists, but it seems to be the major consensus is that things are slow. You're probably entering the toughest part of the financial downturn, and that's the recovery phase. Your policy has always been to put away money in good times and spend it in bad times. As you start to recover, you're going to get pressure from citizens, from employees, and others that want you to loosen the purse strings. And with our strategy, that's just not an option. A continued conservative fiscal policy is going to be essential over this recovery period. This has a lot of numbers and a lot of graphs. What I'm trying to show you, that red line down there at the bottom, that is the current recession that we're in. All of those other, and the, across the bottom is how long it takes to recover back to the pre-recession portion, 70, 80 months before that we fully recover. And that's not unlike anything we've ever seen in the modern era. The financial strategy. The financial strategy has changed from year to year, and it really depends on what are the critical risks in that year. What parts do we really need to hit hard? What parts can we go over softly? We've looked at operating costs. We looked at revenues. We've looked at reserves some year, long-term assets other years. It really depends on what's going on. You're the lucky council that gets to see them all tonight. Because we're in this recovery period, because there's a lot of risk, in this time, I felt that it was really important that we try and go through in depth every single portion of the strategy. I know past councils were sick of this graph, but this is the fundamental underlying strategy of our graph. That gray line that's the curves up and down, that is a government agency's, and in particular the city's revenue cycle. Basically, in economic boom times, we skyrocket in our revenue, and then we'll hit a bust time, and it falls down, and then the next boom time comes up and goes up. So it has historically gone up and down, and many governmental agencies have had their expenses follow that same line, and we did for a lot of that same time. So in the good times, we'd hire a bunch more policemen and firemen and provide a lot of service, and then we'd start to, our revenues would drop off, and so then we'd lay off everybody and cut programs and cut services. And then as soon as we finished all those layoffs, the economy would pick back up, and so we'd try and hire everybody again and do that. That's not good for an organization. That's not good for a long-term strategy. It's not good for your citizens. They get used to a program, that program gets yanked away, and, you know, another program, then it comes back in, then it comes out. Same thing with hiring. As you're hiring, hey, I saw that you laid off, you know, 2 years ago, you know, how likely are you going to do that? So council did a strategy, and they said, we want our service levels to remain constant. We want to provide the same service level in an economic boom that we do in an economic bust. And what we're going to do is we're going to put those excess revenues, the amount over the expenditures in a boom period, put those in the savings bank so that when we're in a bust period where my expenses exceed my revenues, we can spend those. And that's exactly what the council has done. It's been a great strategy, and it's led to a lot of financial health. This recession's very different than what that original plan was for. So when we set those 2 years later, we still didn't see very strong signs of recovery. And so again, in 2011, we dropped that service level down. And that dark blue navy line is pretty much where our service levels are right now, that we're down below where we had originally hoped to be on our service levels. But that's where it looks like we need to maintain to be for a long-term sustainability. That red X there is pretty much where I believe we are in the fiscal recovery. You can see we're down at the bottom of the trough of the economic downturn. Things have been flat. We're just starting to turn upwards, but it really is going to be a long, slow climb out. We're just seeing the first signs of economic recovery. We've talked about the budget process, and basically tonight we're in the informational gathering stage. And the informational gathering stage is a constant process, and we've talked about the strategic plan and how it stood us well. But the strategic plan is always changing and evolving and reacting to what's going on in the environment. As part of the budget process, we gather information, we talk about it. Then, as part of your strategic planning, we're going to make some long-term, we're going to make some budget goals. What is the proper use of reserves? How do we feel on things? What are the policies that we want to set? And then the department heads are going to take the strategic planning goals and figure out how are we going to implement them? What are the costs? How do we do that? And develop action plans. Those action plans will come back to the council. And during all this time, we're still gathering information and refining budget projections and refining costs and fine-tuning things to get things there. We're still gathering information and may change. You know, if there's something significant happens, we bring it back to council and say, hey, you know, we thought property taxes were going to be this number, but they're going to be $500,000 more or $500,000 less. Let's talk about, do we still want the same reserve goals? That's all happening as we try and do that through that actions. As we get closer to May, we're going to pretty much shut off that information gathering because we need a stopping point in order to produce a budget document. We're going to have a final opportunities meeting. That's where our discretionary funds, we talk about on a department head level with council's goals in mind. Where are we going to put those funds? What programs we're going to be in? We'll bring a draft budget that contains the council's goals and the action plans that we've all agreed on to the finance committee for review, and then we'll approve the budget. Immediately after approving the budget, I swear I yell at revenues, operating expenses, long-term costs, reserves, and then current policies and practices. Key actions. It really has been a teamwork effort. It's a team led by the council. You guys have been fantastic leaders showing the way for the organization. The employees have embraced it and been fantastic during this downturn, contributing as much as they can, everywhere they can, coming up with great ideas to bring to council and follow your leadership. So that's been fantastic. You have been a very proactive council. You didn't say, oh, a downturn's coming. You know, what are we going to do? You've taken a lot of steps to try and change that and to try and improve the city's financial position and figure out where we want to do. I think there's almost 60 council actions in the last 4 years where you have either tried to adjust your revenues, your expenses, or look at the financial picture altogether. You've had some key initiatives such as economic development and trying to stimulate various parts of the economy to ensure that we're increasing our revenues. At the same time, you took some tough decisions and took some tough actions to try and reduce those expenditures and stuck to things such as no new programs without new revenues. That's not always easy, and council has been great leaders in that. You have a solid financial plan, and because of that, the city's in solid financial health. We are doing well, especially the depth and breadth of this downturn. Revenues, I'm going to probably spend the most time on property taxes, so don't worry, they won't all be this long. 43% of the general fund revenues are now property tax-based, and that's ignoring the redevelopment shift that we're going to have. There are a lot of different components to property tax. When we talk mostly, I'm going to be talking about current secured because that's the base that's been consistent for the since existence of the city. There's also motor vehicle in lieu or property tax in lieu of motor vehicle in lieu fees, and that's a shift that the state had done. But it follows the same path as current secured. And now there's this new redevelopment distributions. And this is going to have a significant effect on the 2012-2013 revenues. As we dissolve redevelopment, all of the redevelopment assets had to be submitted to the county. So we have talked about, you've received the due diligence reports for the low moderate income where we had to cut a check for $5 million in a little bit. The California Consumer Price Index is going to be up 2% for 13-14. That is always set on January 1st, so we know what that will be. And in general, property taxes are projected to be trending upward. Whoops. Sorry. Okay. Because we have this Prop 8 adjustments in there, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about property taxes and how it works. For years and years and years, basically property taxes have gone up by 2% every single year. People would get their bill in. It was a no-brainer. It was going to be up 2%. But the law is actually a little bit more complicated than that. There's several factors going into property taxes. One of it is the Consumer Price Index. And basically, property taxes is the base of your property when you purchase the property, and it can be increased by the lesser of Consumer Price Index or 2%. So you see in that year two there, they bought the property for $300,000 in year one. The Consumer Price Index was 2.46. That is more than the inflation factor of 2%. The value of the assessed value went up 2%. In the following year, in 2013, the CPI was less than 2%. It was 1.85. Therefore, the property value went up 1.85. So that is one little twist, because we have had CPIs. We actually had a negative CPI in one of the recent property tax years. The part where the Prop 8 adjustments come in are in a declining real estate market. So you are always paying the lesser of the base adjusted by CPI or the fair market value. So if you look here up here, in 1994, the value of the property dropped to $290,000, the fair market value. The base value was $317,000. So they were only assessed on $290,000. And that's what's been happening here in San Luis Obispo County in recent years. The county assessor has been writing down the value of those properties that where the assessed value or the base value is greater than the market value. And those were typically properties built, purchased since 2003 or so. So he was writing down all of those properties. Those that bought their house in 1972, they're probably still, their assessed value is still well below the fair market value, larger increases than just those 2%. So as we start to recover, the assessor will start writing some of those properties that he wrote down back up to the value. How fast, how quickly that happens is honestly up to the assessor's office. And so we'll see some of that. But that is within the next 5 to 7 years, one would imagine. Some of those properties, especially the ones that were deeply discounted, will start coming back. What is happening in our assessed value for the pie? Let me go back just one more minute. There's one more thing about assessed value. The assessed value is always set on January 1st of each year. So the assessed value as of January 1st, or the value of the property as of January 1st, 2013, determines the taxes that people are going to pay in December 2013 and April 2014. So if the housing market takes off in the next 6 months, we're not going to see it in next year's tax roll. We'll see it in the following tax roll. If a house sells, let's say the house sold in June of 2013, I'm not going to see that in my 13-14 tax roll. I won't see it till 14-15 or even later. They have up to 2 years when a house sells to change that market value. And in talking with the assessor's office, they are behind because they've been so busy with the Prop 8 adjustments that those supplemental rolls haven't come through yet. So that's also going on. What did 11-12 versus 12-13 assessed values look like? About 78, if you add the 41-33, 78% of the pie either was increasing or staying the same. So you're looking at 41% of the parcels, the assessed value, went up by 0 to 2%. The majority of those were at the 2% level. 10% or 33% increased between 2 and 10%. So those are some that probably had some minor additions, maybe a little teeny bit of Prop 8 adjustments up, although I don't think there's been very much aggression on doing that, but if somebody added some small improvements, that would do that. And then 4% increased by more than 10%. And those are typically the ones that sold for the higher values. They're the ones where there's some major improvements. Some parcels were decreasing. And you'll see that 2% decreased by a small amount. So what are property taxes going to look like? So if we look at our current secured, this is a history of our current secured property taxes, and those light green bars there at the end are what we're projecting. We're projecting a long, slow climb up. We are projecting that we've hit bottom. We did see that. We're pretty much flat next year. I've talked to the county assessors or county auditor's office to talk about next year, and they're saying what we expect to see next year are your 2% CPI, and they were talking countywide. They haven't broken it down by the city yet. But they said expect your 2% CPI, and they are still doing some negative adjustments for commercial properties. We don't have as many commercial properties as a lot of our neighbors, so we'll probably fare a little bit better. But they were estimating between 1.5 to 1.7 conservatively. I think we'll be much closer to the 1.7 degree. In your staff report, you'll have a bunch of the assumptions that I put in there, and that's what those are. Those are my best guesses on what's going to happen over the next 7 years. We're going to start to see some extra building. The dormant permit program has been very successful. We're starting to see some of those come in. Those will increase our property tax base. We're going to see eventually some rebounding of the real estate market. We are seeing a little bit of that. And so some of those property adjustments will come in. And we really are probably going to see a 2% or more CPI every year. So you'll see fewer Prop 8 adjustments downwards, more Prop 8 adjustments upwards, still very conservative projections with 2 to 4%, I think, was the max increase in any 1 year. Certainly nothing like we saw in those 2000 to 2007 years where we were seeing 9, 10, 11, 15% increases each year. So long, slow, drawn-out recovery. This is the RDA distributions. This was how much the city is going to receive. This is going to come in 12-13. So the city budgeted about a negative, using $1 million of reserves in 12-13. We're going to get about $2 million in RDA distributions that we weren't planning on. So what that's going to mean is that the city will have a positive $1 million where our revenues exceed our expenses in 12-13, but then 13-14 we're going to have to use reserves again. This is one-time money. We talked about it last year. Only city in the county without an additional sales tax. I think Paso Robles goes into effect in April. Everybody else has a half-cent sales tax. But our sales tax has been up over the last two fiscal years, and we expect continued growth. We've had some growth in some industries. Our building and construction is finally starting to turn around. There's a great report from HDL in the staff report, and talk about my sales tax. This is our sales tax projections. Again, the orange, the dark orange, are the actual numbers, and the lighter orange are what my projections are. The projections do include the addition of a Walmart, and then the eventual building of some annex and outlots in some of the out years. Again, all of those are in the staff report. If you guys are interested, I could go through those. Other general fund fees, franchise
Excuse
fees.
Excuse me, Rochelle.
Which is yes.
You might have our mics off here. Did Wade pay you to turn our mics off? On the sales tax projection, I think I heard you say Walmart was included in that. So, for example, if Walmart did not go forward for some reason, that would be an example of where you'd have to readjust those projections. And about how much sales tax is attributed to Walmart, ballpark?
ballpark, let's say, about $500,000 annually. Those come in out in the outer years. 15-16 is, I think, the fiscal year that I picked, although I'd have to double check out exactly. So again, you're going to see it coming before it happens. Yeah. We will have time to adjust, monitor, adjust. If that were to happen, we would monitor and adjust as soon as it looked like more likely than not.
Thank you. Well, I want to keep you on track, but since I have interrupted, any other council questions while we have a...
Just a quick follow-up on that. In reference to the property tax, what kind of number are you attaching to Walmart for? Is there an evaluation put on that yet?
I have not attached a significant number to that yet on property tax. Walmart is in the former redevelopment agency, so it's going to be sucked into that successor agency formula. Basically, 100% of the property tax will go to the successor agency. The successor agency will pay out all of its debts, its bonds that it's on the hook for, its pass-through administration for both the county and the city, and then the agency is just outside.
Yeah, there is a little finger up there, I think. Thank you.
I think no other council questions. Please go ahead.
Okay, other revenues. We do receive about $1 million a year in franchise fees. Those franchise fees I'm expecting to remain flat. We have general increases, although it's been fairly flat, in electricity and garbage fees. But we're also seeing a trend downward in cable franchise fees. It's based on their revenues. So those small increases are pretty much going to be offset by small decreases. I think you'll probably end up just a very slight positive overall. Transient occupancy tax is also up and is continuing trending upward. And we do have the promise of the new hotel at the Home Depot site, and that I have coming in 2015 also. That will be a boost to the TOT. Unfortunately, TOT is not a huge portion of our pie. It's about 3.5% right now. Building permit, another area that is no longer a huge portion of our pie. I remember when it used to be up over 10-15%. It's now in the 3-4% range, but it is picking up. There is some building activity. We're starting to see that. I think if you look at the trends on what we're predicting in the financial statements or in the comprehensive plan, we're not predicting anything like we saw 2004 to 2007, but instead a very modest growth consistent with that. Fees for services is one where I actually adjusted the revenue projections downward a little bit. I think in the past 7-year revenue projections, I had built in fee increases. This council has been very conscious of trying to keep those fees down and the services affordable for everybody during this economic downturn. The downside of that is as we continue the programs and don't collect the fees, we're sending more tax dollars there. There aren't as many for that. And so that's going to be an area of discussion for the council. At what point do we want to start trying to bring those fees and service costs back in line? Interfund revenues, those are basically where the general fund holds the cost, so it would be a portion of the finance department. We provide services to funds like the redevelopment fund or the wastewater fund. So the funds, the costs are in the general growth out. You're going to see that first little spike there. That's our redevelopment distribution that we talked about. And then just continued long, slow growth overall. This is basically after everything gets factored in, all of those things. We're going to get up there, but it's going to be a long time before we see those, 2007 levels. We're probably looking at 18, 19. We almost achieve the same revenue levels that we had in 2007. Operating costs, the other side of the equation. Operating costs are your annual ongoing costs. This is mainly employees, is a very large portion, but it's office supplies and waters and irrigation and bullets and softballs and all of those types of things make up your operating costs. Employee services represent 72% of the general fund expenditures. And there's lots of cost components that go into that. You have your full-time employees, you have part-time employees, just as scorekeepers and lifeguards and cashiers. You have other cost components, such as overtime and workers' compensation, health insurance, retirement costs, unemployment, leave balances. All of those go into your total employee services costs. There's six bargaining units within the city, or six different MOUs. You have police, you have fire, you have SEIU, mid-management, management, and confidential. All contracts are up for negotiation. Again, this year they all expire June 30th, and we're starting to go through that process here in the next couple of months. We are coming off, or we have had layoffs, chills, and reorganizations. Our recent reorganization was one where we've had a policy in place since 2008 where we look at every opening that comes up and try and get the most bang for our buck out of those dollars trying to figure things out. That was part of the reorganization we had. We had significant layoffs in 2009. We've chilled a number of positions. And then the last raise that employees had was July 1st, 2008. And I'm just trying to set that up because there will be tremendous pressure as you start to recover from employees and the citizens to try and change that. And so it's important to realize where they're coming from. There have been a significant number of changes to PERS and retirement systems. Lastly implemented PEPRA, which again changed how PERS acts. And that establishes a third tier of employees. So employees hired after January 1st, 2013 that were not in the PERS system previously are actually in a third, even lesser tier. That does affect the cost. And it does also have some ramifications on employee movement and other things, too. Staffing levels. The city of Atascadero has always done more with less. This is fire staffing levels. But if I put up the graph for police or parks or public works or planning or inspectors or finance people, it's going to be very similar. We are not a well-funded city. We don't have a large tax base, and so we've always had to do more with less. This downturn has pretty much magnified that. We've had the reserve, so we hadn't had to take as deep a cut as some of the others, but it's just, as you chill the position next to you, you feel it a lot more. That work didn't go away. We have not been really good about cutting programs, even though we always say that we're going to, but we still want to keep the same service levels just with fewer people. And so I think if you talk to employees, that's going to be a recurring theme throughout the city is staffing levels. People are feeling the pinch of that. Frankly, employees are tired of the downturn. They've been wonderful partners with the council and contributing, and when it first started, everybody was pitching in and couldn't wait to help and had fantastic ideas on how to cut services. I think we're all getting over that. As you're working longer, harder, expectations haven't changed, but you have less to do it with. You have fewer operating dollars to fix that sprinkler pipe. You have you're missing a body to cover that shift. They're just getting tired and frustrated with the downturn, and things are just tight all over. So you're going to start to hear that as we go through this. Again, this is the history of employee services, excluding wastewater and transit. In the assumptions, there aren't any raises or big changes in staffing somewhere else. When in my monthly meeting with department heads, I'm just not seeing that flexibility. Things are very, very tight all over. The decisions that they're trying to make, you know, we're starting to get penny wise but pound foolish, which doesn't make a lot of sense in the long run. We are going to have to increase budgets. We cut by 5% 2 years in a row, two budget cycles in a row. That's not realistic for the next budget cycle. You're pretty much at the max. We are going to have, like that one-time revenue, we are going to have a one-time expense. We've been talking about this for a number of years. CJPIA has a retro deposit that is coming due. It's going to be around $800,000, and that's due July 1st, 2013. We have enjoyed some insurance savings the last few years as we haven't had to pay that down, but that's coming due. And then the budgets can't take more cutting at line item level. That's just what I was referring to when I talked about my meetings with departments. Things are just tight. You used to see departments come in well underneath their budget. You're not seeing that anymore. In fact, you know, we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. We are also at the maximum cutting without major service programs or changes. The layoffs we did in 2009, again, we didn't change any service levels, or we changed service levels slightly. Your next round of cuts, if you did want to cut, would be pretty significant. To get any realistic funds, you're probably talking about closing a facility or eliminating a whole sector of programs. I don't believe there's a department out there where you could say, okay, what if we laid off two more people in your department that they said that we can do it? They all feel like they're at their max capacity. In fact, they're over max capacity right now. If that Walmart didn't come in and we knew that tomorrow and we had to change, your next round of cuts are extremely tough. Not that the last ones have been easy, but the next ones are even worse. The modest bumps upward will be necessary in 2013-15, and that's, you know, where I was talking about those operating supplies and services. And we got to keep employees in mind. We got to figure out how to keep them engaged, how to keep them hanging in there as part of the team, because it is going to be long and slow. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, but it's not through those two. Streets and bridge maintenance. Streets and bridges are our largest system of assets. I think in the staff report or in the comprehensive financial plan, you'll see a reserve number of a negative $47 million. Don't panic. We don't need to come up with $47 million tomorrow. What that number represents is what it would take to bring all of our roads up to brand new condition. We don't need all of our roads up into brand new condition. I think our citizens would be upset if we said, hey, we need to tax you enough that we could bring all our roads to brand new condition. What our condition is less than that. Do we want a good condition? Do we want a fair condition? What is it that we're comfortable with, and what funding level do we want our citizens to have to pay for? I think Russ did a fantastic job in the roads program, going through how our roads are prioritized, what kind of condition our roads are in, and really right now they're in a fair condition. To maintain them in a fair condition, we don't have to put a dime more towards reserves, but we do need to have to pay the $1.5 million or the $2.3 million, annually in there. The problem is we made very great progress in that in the last few years, putting in more than what we need to in the annual reserves, actually improving the condition of roads. But a lot of that was state, federal, and regional funding. ARRA was a great boost in the arm. There were a lot of really good state programs out there, Proposition 1B, those types of things. Those are starting to dry up, and those are a critical source of city funding. We're fine. We're meeting our immediate needs. We're meeting our needs for the next 5 to 10 years. We're not going to meet our needs long-term without a fundamental shift in the way the city is funded. We have huge stretches of roads for very few parcels, and so that doesn't work out well for a long-term strategy. Is it something we need to address tomorrow? No. Is it something that we should be aware of and be thinking of for the future? Yes. I know nobody's a fan of raising taxes. I certainly don't like to pay more in taxes. But that might be a strategy that we need to think about in the future, whether it be a sales tax or a road assessment district. Some of those things we've talked about in the past. It's not critical. Now may not be the time to do it. But we need to be thinking about that as we plan for our future. Storm drains has always been a huge unknown, but thanks to Russ and his crew, they've just completed an inventory of all of the storm drains in the system. And they set aside or had a plan for storm drains. But typically, when the storm drain fails, it's typically on a bad road. And so as you're replacing the road, you're also replacing the storm drain that runs underneath the road because that caused failure. Yes, Mayor O'Malley.
Let's see. The mic is on. And one, I would agree, Russ, you've done an outstanding job on looking at our infrastructure. I was curious. I know you have a pretty elaborate system for prioritizing roads throughout the city, and there's costs associated. Are the storm water management or the drainage system, are they incorporated into that road estimate, or is there a, do you have a separate categorization? Like you could kind of show me a list of drain systems around the city, and they're prioritized in terms of better or worse, and what the approximate replacement cost would be.
We actually, once we did this inventory, we now have a separate list of which storm drains are in bad condition. I mean, there's a few under El Camino that we've addressed over the last few months that, you know, were a surprise. So they are prioritized separately from the roads above them.
Good. I think that'd be helpful then in managing replacements when it might coincide with other projects then. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Councilman Kelly.
Do we have any drainage or bridges that are in critical condition that would need immediate maintenance or replacement in the near future?
I don't think there's any that are in critical, but there are several that Caltrans does our annual bridge inspections, and each 2 years, every single bridge in the city gets inspected. So there's a couple out there that we're going to start in this next budget cycle, going to start down that road with trying to get some federal money for replacements.
Thank you. Other council questions? Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Mayor. Building replacements is another. The city owns a lot of assets, including the historic City Hall, two fire stations, police stations, corporate yards, zoo facilities, and beautiful zoo entrance building, the pavilion, lots of buildings. Those, again, deteriorate, need to have money put into them on an ongoing basis for repairs and to extend the life and possibly even for replacement. We have about $2.4 million put away in reserves for building replacements. We're meeting our immediate and short-term needs, pretty much our critical needs in the next 1 to 10 years, that $2.4 million for another 100 years. And the ongoing maintenance that we're going to have to put into it those first few years that we move in are going to be significantly less than it would have been without that. We continue to look for grants and other opportunities. We've been very successful with those things. The energy efficiency grant helped replace all the HVAC. We've looked at other grants. I think we received a grant once for roofing. Very good at that. We continue to do that. But this is another area where long-term, we don't have any critical needs. This is not something that we need to address now. But we do have a lot of facilities and need to find a funding source as we have these facilities for our city. Technology replacement, this has a much shorter life than those other assets that we've been talking about. And because of that, council has always made it a priority to fully fund replacement of our technology. You know, our computers last 4 years, some things last two. We want to make sure, because we're so reliant on our technology, whether it be police or fire or finance, that it's there and it's working on a daily basis. And so we've always funded technology. We'll continue to fund technology. We expect to meet all needs, both short-term and long-term, with the fund. And we continue to have a very aggressive technology department that does their own strategic planning. I think they're going to be bringing to you in the next month or two a plan for reorganizing how we do our servers and our computers that people work on and stuff in an effort to try and save ongoing cost and long-term cost, and it's a great plan, so that'll be coming your way.
I think we have some council questions.
Just a brief question. So the information technology department, that $500,000, that's kind of the greater servers and all of that. Is that what that is?
That is correct. It actually contains, what we do is we put all the equipment and all the software, so like the finance software is also in the information technology fund.
Okay.
And so that includes replacement for all departments and all you know, okay. Not just the servers, but the computers themselves, in whether it be in police or finance or anywhere else.
Okay, I guess I was confused then, because it seems like there's all the different departments listed, and then information technology is its own department. So I was assuming computers and things for, say, administration or something were under those other line items. So then I didn't know what information technology in and of itself, which is like about half of it.
Right. A police car lasts 4 years at max. So we've been trying to fund, and we continue to try and fund, all of those vehicles as they come due. The fund is fully funded. We have enough money in there to replace all the vehicles as they come due on schedule. We have been very aggressive in extending the lives of vehicles, but making sure that we're penny-wise and pound-wise, that we're not extending the life of the vehicle but paying more in maintenance. We've been looking at that. I think the police department has a wonderful volunteer that does a fantastic job keeping those police vehicles that have a lot of miles on them each year going and looking and saying, okay, you need to now spend more in maintenance than it would cost to replace it, and they do great. We have reduced the annual vehicle replacement contribution in order to balance the budget or to meet our budget goals. And the way we did that is very similar to the general fund. We had excessive reserves in there. We had delayed purchase of some vehicles, so we had reserves from that. Plus, we were very aggressive. And so what we've been able to do is reduce that annual contribution. I'd expect that as part of the next budget plan, we'll still have that to some extent. And the other thing that we did is those vehicles such as fire trucks and dump trucks, where we know we're not going to have to replace them for 20 years, 35 years, 40 years, reducing those annual contributions for right now. Right now it's the toughest time to do that. We're figuring sometime in the next 25 years we're going to find the money to do that. This vehicle fund had $0 in it when Wade and I first started, and I told him he was dreaming to ever have it fully funded. We not only have it fully funded, we have it surplus funded. So we were able to make up in those boom years all of the backlog of stuff plus this. We're not even digging nearly that hole, just a small hole, and we have a long time to fill it. So that would be probably one of my budget recommendations as we go through. We all are meeting all of our short-term and immediate needs, not only what's going to come due in the next 2 years, but what's going to come due in the next 10 years will still remain fully funded. Equipment replacement has a small replacement reserve. This is a category that has not been fully funded. We tried to throw a little bit of money at it as we had some really good years, but don't necessarily have the best handle on all of the equipment. We have been very, very successful at getting grants for equipment replacement needs, as we need that term funding source at some point. And go from there. Leave accruals. We've spent a lot of time over the last year talking about leave accruals. There are many components to the leave accrual balance. There's holiday pay, sick pay, vacation pay, comp time, where an employee, instead of being paid for overtime, can accrue leave. All of those things all go into the leave accrual balance. Leave is paid out annually through the annual budget amount. So if I take a vacation day, it's not an extra pay. It's in the annual budget. If an employee leaves, they are, by law, entitled to certain leave payouts. We have paid those, and historically we have been able to accommodate those within the budgets that we have. Accrued leave, which is the balance that we have on hand for, again, when an employee leaves out, has typically ebbed and flowed with the economy, which makes a lot of sense. As you're in an economic boom time, employees have more money in their pocket, they feel richer, life is good, they're more likely to take a vacation. There's also more people there to cover their work while they're gone. They're feeling better about life, and they're also more mobile. Downside, they're more likely to leave, not stay at the city of Atascadero for as long a period, so they're going to leave earlier. As you go into an economic bust cycle, employees aren't usually as excited to go on vacation. They don't feel they have the money to take exotic trips. They're feeling like, okay, if I go on vacation, staffing's so short, I need to find somebody to cover my shifts, or I got to put in a ton of overtime before and after. So it tends to accrue up in bust cycles. This is exactly what we're seeing. This has been the longest, deepest bust. This is probably the highest we've seen that balance. But council took some steps to approve and set a limit on the vacation accrual practice. So there is a new policy in place as part of the adopted rules and regulations that limit what that accrual balance can be. And we set the historical stuff back there and then do that. We are running into some operational issues with that. As we said, the staffing hasn't changed. You have employees that are now aggressively taking their vacation, which is really good for them and for their health, but the work isn't going away. And so we are seeing more overtime and other operational costs that'll probably come through as supplemental requests for the budget.
Combination of a lot of factors, and it's almost unfair to look at one category when you look at, well, what's it take to get the job done? We are cutting costs on staffing. We have fewer staff. We're not doing raises. We're not doing cost of living increases. And, yeah, a lot of staff are not taking time off that they would be entitled to, and so their balances are going up, but they're getting the job done. The alternative would be we had more staffing or we just had more staffing, and you wouldn't have these balances accumulate. So it's, to me, it's kind of a trade-off, and in total, I think we are getting more work done at a lower cost for the city with the mix we're choosing. Is that a realistic assumption on how I'm looking at this?
That is actually very well said.
Okay, well,
you're
thank
right on.
You. You're a good teacher. Any other council? Will keep going then. I think we're getting towards the end.
You are getting towards the end. Hey, and speaking of wonderful staffs, I just want to point out the numbers in the audit report are a little bit different than the numbers in the comprehensive financial plan were different than those that we looked at with Council Member Kelly and on the audit report. That is because there's a difference between short-term and long-term and how they're reported in the audit report. If anybody's interested, I can walk through how the audit report actually does tie to this. And I was incorrect in assuming there was a $500 error. I can show Council Member Kelly how that ties exactly. I apologize. I should have known that Jerry and Jerry would never make even a $500 error like that. So thank you, guys. We'll do a good thing.
Well, okay. Immaterial as it was, thank you for not even making that mistake.
Okay, so the summary for the long-term cost, the city is ahead of the game by even thinking about long-term costs. This is a critical thing. This is something that you revisit, and we keep in the forefront of our minds. Whenever we're making a decision about adding a new facility or improving a new facility, we've always been very careful about, can we maintain it? How are we going to fund replacement? How are we going to fund maintenance of whatever it is we're adding? We've made great strides. If you looked at where we were in 1997 compared to where we are today, it's night and day. Made great strides on all of the programs. The road programs made a huge improvement. We have vehicles funded. We have technology funded. All of those types of things, something we need to think about. Reserves, we are getting there. For the purpose of this discussion, basically reserves equals fund balance. Fund balance is the difference between your assets, what it is that you own that's positive, that's a good thing, less all of your liabilities. What do you owe? Who do you owe that? And the net difference is your reserves or your fund balance. There's different categories of reserves. There's governmental accounting standards set very specific categories of how you're supposed to break out your fund balance. Probably the one that's of the most interest to us is those unspendable reserves. And what that means is that I have an asset like the loan from the redevelopment agency. There's $1.4 million that the redevelopment agency owes to the city. It is something that's positive. The city has a right to that money. The new legislation said, hey, after you follow all of these steps, you can get that money paid back over a very long period of time. It's an asset. It goes to your bottom line. You can't spend it right now because you basically have a promise to pay over the next long period of time. Each fund has its own reserve. If you look in the audit report where the city has over 50 funds. Each fund is set up for a specific purpose. Most of the funds are restricted in some manner or another. There is $6.6 million in reserves in my internal service funds. These are only restricted by you. If you wanted to get rid of those restrictions and use them for whatever it is, you can just by a vote transfer them back to the general fund. But those are the monies that we set aside for our vehicle replacement, our building replacement, our technology replacement. So everything that we just talked about, that $6.6 million set aside for all of those replacements. But if you decided to say, hey, we're no longer going to fund vehicle replacement, we're going to pay as you go, transfer all that money back to the general fund, you could. I don't recommend it, but it's there and available. As of June 30, 2012, the general fund had $6.5 million in reserves, which represented about 38.6% of general fund expenditures. That's a very common way to look at what should your proper reserve level be, is what percentage of that year's expenditures do you have on hand? 38.6 is a very distribution. Where does that put us, and what does that mean? There is a 7-year projection. I think I flagged it on some years. This is critical. This is basically, if we put all of these assumptions together in the comprehensive plan, what does it look like over the next 7 years? Where are we going to end up? And the reason we want to look out that far 7 years, at least 7 years, is to make sure that we're going to make it. As we're using reserves, are we using the right amount of reserves? Are we using too much? Are we using too little? What's going to be recommended? This is the current recommendation with those assumptions. As we change an assumption, as we change a plan, if we decide to increase costs, that's going to change these numbers, and vice versa, how much reserves we use. What does that look like throughout it? With this current assumptions in there, reserves will drop to about $4.3 million or 24.2% of general fund expenditures in 2016-17. This 7-year projection is longer, slower, drawn out a little bit more. We have more reserves. We're not using quite as much, so our fund balance doesn't drop as low as other projections. But it is a little bit longer before we kick back, and I think that's probably for a little bit more conservative revenue projections, absorbing redevelopment, and some other things. What is the council's reserve policy, and does this 7-year projection fit within there? Council has a very simple reserve policy. There's 7 very simple sections to it, and I'm going to go through them all if you'll bear with me. Section 1. The city's general underlying and overriding financial reserve strategy is to continue to build reserves in periods of financial growth and to judiciously use those reserves in periods of economic downturn. Again, this is a strategy that's been the cornerstone of our strategy. It's worked. We're in good, solid financial health because of that. Section 2, reserves should be evaluated, funding goals considered, and the accumulation and or expenditure of reserves determined as part of the adoption of the biennial budget. That's what we're doing tonight, and that's why we're putting a lot of this in our comprehensive financial strategy. 3, as part of the biennial budget process, 11 key measurements should be evaluated both independently and in conjunction with one another to determine the prudent level of general fund reserves for that 2-year budget cycle. The number one of the 11 is the state of the economy. This is probably the one that we need to analyze the most. A lot of the other ones doesn't change much from year to year, but you'll see that we're more heavily reliant on property taxes than a lot of our neighboring cities. If you look at San Luis Obispo there at the far end, you'll see they have a lot more different types of revenues. They're a lot more diverse than we are. The good news is that property taxes is actually one of the more stable revenue bases there is. We've seen some swings in it, but they're not large swings. We saw downturns of 1 to 2 to 3%, nothing above 3%. If you look at property tax per capita, constant dollar, we've been fairly consistent there throughout our history. There has been a little, jump up in there, but we're right about where we were. So it's a very stable revenue base. We're always subject to actions from the state and federal government. We think that we have protected ourselves through Prop 1A or other propositions, and they seem to find a way around that. The state's in good financial shape after the Prop 30, so hopefully they'll have their hands out of our pocket for a little bit, but they still tend to find things that we need to do on an annual basis and add more services to us. Cash flow needs. The cash flow ebbs and flows, particularly in the general fund. Overall, on a citywide basis, and this is citywide, it's not a huge change from month to month to month. But in the general fund, you are. Your general fund's heavily reliant on property taxes. We receive property taxes twice a year. So we receive them in December and May. Basically, from May or June, when we receive that last property tax, until November when we start getting some more, we're spending more money than we have coming in, and that's depleting our cash balance. We have not gone to negative cash in a number of years. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the city participated in what was called a tax revenue anticipation note, where we would actually issue a note for that short-term period, and it was a tax-free note, and then use those cash funds for that period and then pay it back again. And it actually ended up a positive for the city. We were ineligible to do that once we started to go into a positive cash flow every year and build enough reserves. Because of the market, that's probably not as attractive, but we have over $50 million in cash of all the other funds. It's okay for the general fund to go negative in the cash balance for a month or two, as long as we're monitoring and adjusting and making sure that we're really, which we just went through, consistency and desired service levels, which we talked about a lot at the beginning, available opportunities, future commitments, and you do earn interest, which helps your revenue on reserves. There shall be no upper limit on the amount of general fund reserve. Rather, reserve levels shall be set based on the criteria in Section 3. Why is there no upper limit? Again, we want to accumulate reserves in good times. People might look at it and say, oh, a 65% reserve, the city's sitting on reserves when that's money that could be spent to provide services to the citizens. We consciously decided to put away that money so we can use it in downtimes. So 65% at the top of an economic boom is the exact right percent for the city of Atascadero, and that's kind of why we want to look at that. Section 5, except in the case of natural or fiscal emergencies, the city's general fund reserve shall not fall below 20% of budgeted general fund expenditures. Again, the 7-year projection shows that that would be the case if we, if we stuck with these assumptions. And again, this is just a graphic representation of that. You'll see those economic boom, had a lot of reserves, starting to use those reserves where we start to build back up. Section 6, in the event of a natural or fiscal emergencies, the general fund reserve level may fall below 20%. However, within 6 months of the declared emergency, the City Council shall adopt a long-term financial plan to bring the general fund reserves up to the minimum level prescribed above. That's, again, in a natural disaster, you may need to spend all your money up front, and that's okay as long as you have a plan on how do you get back healthy. That's why that's in there. And then 7 is just for on the implementation. So it's a very strong reserve policy. It's a very good reserve policy, and has stood you in good practice for these last few years. Policies and practices, I'm getting there. Wade was just pointing out that when we did our presentation to Standard & Poor's on our bond ratings, that this policy, they were impressed by. They said this is a smart policy. A lot of cities say, reserves shall not go below 15% or 10% or whatever the percent may be. They were saying, wow, you guys really think about reserves, think about how to use them and how to do that. And it's much better than having to cut something off and cut off a program or close a facility only to, as things come back up, turn around and try and reopen it after things have deteriorated, your infrastructure, your employees have fallen apart. It's a solid financial plan. I think we need to continue to look for operational efficiencies. I'm not holding out a ton of hope, but we're always looking and the employees always come up with great ideas. Continue to evaluate all expenditures. Even though, you know, we're at a plateauing and starting to recover, I think the practice of looking at all positions as they come open to see if, you know, is there a better, wiser place to spend that money or how we're spending that money is a good thing. We need to be realistic in setting operating budgets. I don't think we can say another 5% across the board cut without changing the way we do something. We need to continue to be aggressive with economic development. Council's been great leaders in aggressively trying to stimulate economic development, get our property tax base, get our commercial base, get our sales tax up, TOT. We need to continue long-term replacement reserve funding at the current level and continue to think about that. We should continue the practice of no new or expanded programs without new program or revenue sources or operational cuts. We need to continue to analyze and monitor economic conditions. We need to consider the long-term and short-term when making decisions. And we need to understand the recovery is slow but underway. We are turning around. It doesn't feel like it yet. There aren't big leaps in revenue, and I don't think we will see any big leaps. It'll be an incremental growth. Understand that a continued conservative fiscal policy is going to be tough but essential, and know that the city continues to enjoy solid financial health due to careful planning. We are in good, solid financial shape. So again, here's the six factors we went in at the front. Huge downturn, deeper, longer, larger than anybody expected. We have a comprehensive financial strategy. That comprehensive financial strategy is a living, breathing document that we need to change as conditions around us change. We have reduced staffing, operations, and long-term investment. The recovery started and will likely be slow. And continued conservative fiscal policy will be essential.
And so your staff, you have got one of the greatest teams I've ever seen on fiscal, and they're just all nice people. Could you introduce some of your help here?
Absolutely. We have Jerry Rangel up there, who's the Deputy Director of Community Services, did a wonderful job writing several of the sections within the staff report and been great help. And Jerry Corgill. Jerry Corgill got to analyze every single parcel within the city, compare last year's assessments to this year's assessment. Unfortunately, we couldn't do it electronically, so she got to go by hand and then look up what some of the big changes were. So that was a huge, huge piece of it. But it's very important to understand what's going on with that big property tax basis. They're a great team. I have a lot more members, too, that pick up as we work on stuff like this, pick up a lot of the slack that we have to let go as we try and focus on this. A great team. Thank you, Mayor Malley.
Thank you. Didn't think it was possible to outdo Warren Frace, but very nice presentation. We'll go ahead with council questions. I'll start with Bob. We'll work left to the right.
Well, I think I'll call it a tie. That was an incredible report. I'm a little micro-picky going through the numbers, I think, as some of you know, and I feel very, very comfortable that you gave us a true picture of where the city's at, options of what we have to do, and I just want to thank you and your staff for giving an honest report. I feel very, very comfortable with it, that nothing was hidden or what have you, and I think it just shows the transparency and the professionalism of our city. I want to thank you.
Thank you, Bob. That was a very nice thing to offer, and we completely agree with you.
I do. I also echo that. The honesty was what really struck me about looking at the employees, looking at what this downturn has done, and I understand that. I understand where the employees are coming from, and I understand it's been long and hard, and so thank you. Thank you for the honesty. Quick question. One question I have is 0.5% sales tax. If we were to do something like that, just as a thought, what do you have any idea of what kind of revenue that would generate?
At current levels, I would estimate that it would be over $1.5 million a year, over $1.5 million. We're going to actually be a little bit higher than half of what our sales tax is, because a lot of people don't know. When you purchase a car, you pay sales tax for the rate you live in. So when people purchase a car in San Luis Obispo, they pay the 1% to the city. they don't have to pay the extra half cent to San Luis Obispo. If the city of Atascadero...
It was very interesting and well done. But I know that health care is increasingly expensive, and you had a 6% increase, it looked like, per year that would be going on to the bill. Is that correct?
That is our best estimate based on the past. Health care, as you know, is in the middle of a huge reform. When you talk to our brokers and other on what to expect in the future, they're not sure yet how the new health care reform act is going to affect our health care or not affect it. We did very, very well this last year. We had huge decreases. I think it was 30% on our HMO plan, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but also a decrease in our PPO plan. That's fantastic. Our MOUs are written so that basically the city picks up the portion of the increase or decrease each year, depending on what that is. So 6% was my best estimate with the information I have available. Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to adopt the next budget without a lot more information. Brokers and health insurance agencies and others are still trying to figure out what the exact effect of health care reform will be. We know it'll be different. Not sure what it looks like yet.
Yeah, I think that's a wild card that we won't know until it's played. A question regarding any assets that we have that we could sell. When you went through this, did you identify anything that we needed to get rid of, property or anything that might be used to generate revenue?
I was looking to Russ. I did not, when we were going through this, we did not necessarily identify that. The city does own a variety of small parcels throughout the city. What the value of those parcels are, or not, may have some. We are very aggressive on selling equipment once we're done with it and putting it out for auction. Unfortunately, we typically use stuff to death. It doesn't have much of a value when we're done with it by the time it's been passed through everybody.
Well, so, I can remember a while back, probably 7 or 8 years ago, we sold off some little pocket parks that were available as separate parcels, and I just wondered if there's anything we're missing or we need to look under the rug one more time.
I'll defer to Russ on that.
We have looked at that inventory, and there are a number of parcels around town. A lot of them, like you said, are those little park parcels that are usually pretty small, irregular-shaped areas that wouldn't be really suitable for housing construction. But there's probably a few parcels out there that could be surplused.
It might be something we want to look at down the road or consider. Are we looking at any increasing fees as far as you know from other agencies? I know that one of the big ones was animal control, for instance. That was $250,000 a year, and I don't know how much that would be per pet, but it's an awful lot.
Absolutely.
And, do we see any more of those types of things coming down the pike?
Absolutely. Other agencies are also experience the same as one of those areas that I think I touched on briefly in the staff report, that we're having a tough time keeping up. Animal control is one of them. There is a bright side. A recent court case on property tax collection fees has gone in the city's favor. And so we might actually see a reduction in that. It's still in the appeal process, so it's not a done deal. But, hey, there is one bright light on that.
Very good. We're going to have about $1.1 million left over from that redevelopment bonus, I'm going to call it, that one-time bump. Do you have any plans for that besides it going into the reserve pot? I know that's probably our bailiwick, but I didn't mention.
I think what we had talked about last year, and I think it's still a sound plan, is to go ahead and move that into reserves to help try and cover, like you said, the operational cost issue, which between the revenues and the expenses is about $450,000 a year. So we're trying to absorb that along. And that $2 million that we're looking at there is going to go, you know, it's going to help us for the next 5 years and help us keep us in reserve. So I think it would be very wise to leave that in reserve. Otherwise, you know, if it was to expend, all of the numbers would shift down by $1.9 million. So.
Okay. I'll have some further thoughts about that, probably at strategic planning. One of the things that I'm not sure how we gauge, but you touched on it, is the excessive use of overtime because work needs to be done. There's just not enough bodies there. And then we need to weigh this out, the cost of the overtime versus putting in a new position. Is there some way that we can gauge this and know when we really have to replace someone?
I think that we look at that very critically in every single department, in every single time. If a fireman is off, fire has been very aggressive on trying to move around shifts and shift trade and try and get to places where we don't have to fill that body. When you're talking about a permanent body, does it make more sense to add a permanent body versus pay the overtime? Again, that's a balance in each of the departments that has to be looked at. In some departments right now, by the time you add your retirement costs and your health insurance costs and all that, overtime is actually a cheaper option, even paying a time and a half, than an additional body for those hours. You do have the cost as you try and bump up that overtime and get there, then you start getting employee burnout and tiredness. So it's a constant balancing act. It's one where the departments work with Wade and with everybody together.
Rochelle, the $450 a year that will now be coming out of the general fund that was redevelopment, that's something that really isn't going away because that's part of our economic development, correct? So that it's not like you can say, oh, in 3 years we're done with that. It's ongoing.
That is correct. So okay. Those the majority of that was on economic development. We're still going to have to administer the redevelopment to some extent or another throughout the life. So those are costs that we're bearing whether or not that are going to be continuing.
So that some of that does go to that argument of having that 2.1 because we are going to be putting out 2.1 in the next 4-point-some-odd years.
Absolutely.
Okay. Just one other thought on the employees and the overtime and that. Are temporary employees ever an option when someone's on vacation, or is it too much getting someone up to speed and not a realistic option, or is that sometimes a possibility?
Again, we look at the individual position. Sometimes it is. I would say the majority of time it's not. There's such a huge learning curve for most of the positions that you can't just plop somebody in there. But it certainly does help in some positions and at sometimes just having that extra body. So okay. We look at those opportunities also.
Okay. Well, very in-depth, and you've given us a lot to think about for strategic planning this weekend, so thank you.
Thank you. I was going to make a few observations or comments, and we do want to hear from the public if you still have any energy out there. But one, my thought about audits, I think this is the only council I recollect that actually has public and private sector experience. I actually worked in both sectors, and I think that's why we have some of the questions we do, and I think it's also really helpful in looking at these budget items. But I can tell you from personal experience, having managed in both worlds, I'd take the private sector over public any day. I have as many picky questions as Bob says he has on private sector, because you got one or two shots at this. In the public sector, you're never done. You are audited time and time and time again, and there's so many levels of review. I tend to not get too excited when there's a question first go around. Took a hit on thinking you might have goofed, but as it turns out, no, you actually didn't. It's some of it, the problem of the complexity in reporting, and there are different visions of the same data. It takes a little bit of time until the state changes the rules, and then we might be wrong for a while, but that's beyond our control. I think another thing I want to do is really take time to appreciate staff. We are the only city in the county that hasn't had a COLA since 2008. Everyone else has taken this on, and I remember when we've gone through the budget process, our budget negotiations, we actually came to conclusions before any other city, as far as I know. So our staff made personal sacrifices on behalf of our city. We take pride, I know, in being the lowest paid city council in the county, but our staff really are dedicated. And I think I want to also stand up for them with our community and remind folks that as things turn around, there is a role for the public sector, and we've made a decision on what mix of services we want, and we're going to need to stand by our staff and remember that they are the only folks in the county that didn't take a COLA since 2008, and we want to be fair with them when we are in a position to gain some ground. So that's not being supporting massive growth of government. That's just being fair with our local employees who've done a good job through these tough times. So I think we need to have some of that discussion during our budget discussions as well. And again, it's a good point to remind that with strategic planning coming up this weekend and the budget planning coming up, this is the time to ask questions. Get them to council. Get them to you. We want to address them. As Bob said, we are working to be very transparent. We want to make sure we understand all areas. And lastly, I just want to thank our community because we really have a community partnership. I think of just the volunteer spirit we have in our community. We just talked about the Kiwanis doing the bandstand. Yes, it ought to be the Centennial Bandstand. We'll have that discussion pretty soon. But we can be very thankful for whether it's Friends of the Library or whoever has done so much in our community that's also been an alternative to government paying for everything. And we have a great business community that has really worked well with us. So we have a lot to be thankful for. So with that, I want to, speaking of community partnership, open it up to any of you that are here who'd like to add a comment or a question, please do. This is your chance. Seeing no sprint, move on. And thank you, Rochelle, and your team for an excellent report. We are now to council announcements and reports. And first, any of your own activities outside of committee reports, we could hear that from any council member. Well, let me mention two then while we're at it, and I'd like to have this come back for further discussion. I have been following the progress of the library project. We certainly want that library to be built in time for our centennial. I just got word from the Friends of the Library. They are down to the last 30,000. They are short. They are going out to bid with the county, and the county is really wanting to make sure they have all the money ready to go at that time. I suspect that after Dancing with the Stars, they'll have that remaining amount in hand. It might be a little late for keeping this project moving forward as fast as we need to have it completed this next year. So I have talked with staff. I'd like to consider what the council could do, possibly advancing some of the fees we get from a development. We have development impact fees. For example, we gain about $10,000 a year or so on average just from permit fees that goes towards specifically libraries. And we could look at possibly advancing that. That's a discussion we could have. I would point out, as I pointed out to Friends of the Library, I looked at the estimated fees if Walmart is approved, $1,900,000 plus. It'd be $35,000 just for library expansion if Walmart is approved. Let's say it gets through the court here, and just even in March, I believe they would be bringing a check in. But anyway, it just shows you the impact of some of these. So that's something that we might want to consider as a council. I'll leave that to staff if that can be brought back for consideration. I think the last thing I would bring up is I would like to have a discussion, if need be, for naming the bandstand at the lake, as was suggested, public comment, if there's a process on that. If there's council's consensus to have staff bring that back for an action or discussion item. So if we could do that, that would be great. Seeing no other council announcements or reports, we'll go to committee report.
There, but the conference was sold out. It was probably the first one I've been to that has been that well attended. There's that much interest in local government and in doing it right. So in building our relationships with each other, relationships with other council members, learning, there's just so much that goes on in this realm of staff and city council and all that goes on to make a city work. So It was just an excellent time of learning relationships and also building relationships with our Assemblyman Kacho Shajian and with Bill Monning. We had a great meeting with them and also had a nice dinner with them, being able to relate on not only just a city council level, but also a personal level, get to know them. We're going to be working with them. They're going to be our representatives representing what our interests are here in Atascadero and the state of California. So it's very important that we build those relationships. So like Councilmember Fonzie had mentioned about what can they do for us, and so that's exactly what we're going to be pursuing. So it's it was very good when it comes to, like I said, relationships, learning, building those relationships, and really getting to know how things are working, not only for us, but also on our county level and our state level as well. What can we do? How can we make a difference? And just one quick thing that Kacho had to share with us was that the budget he claims is truly balanced, but it's fragile. There is a lot of cuts that were made on a state level, and there's a lot of hemorrhaging that's taking place. There's more to be seen on that. So I'm not confident that we're not going to see more fees, regulations, those kind of things come our way. It's going to take some time to vet all this out and to see exactly what happens. So more to come, and we're definitely taking steps to definitely keep our interests as a city on the forefront with our local with our legislators and doing what's best for the city of Atascadero.
Thank you. Any other reports you would offer, or we'll move on?
No, that's the only one that I've got going right now.
Very good. Councilwoman Fonzie.
Yes, I need to ask for a little guidance from the council tonight. There was a LAFCO meeting last Thursday. I was ill and was not able to go. I have an email that was sent to Wade from the director, David Church, asking for comments and changes on LAFCO policies. I would like to know if it's all right with the other council members that I will review those policies and give them feedback on my own. I can email you if you choose. It's really your call on how you would like me to handle that.
I have all the confidence with your experience.
The power balance has changed on that board. So I will report to you. I think you will be very pleased when we hear what it is. Other than that, we have a design review committee meeting coming up. I believe it's the 31st, and this will be for Eagle Ranch. So if any of you have a chance to look in or want information from staff, this should be very interesting. I anticipate that we'll have quite a few people there.
Thank you. Councilmember Kelly.
Yes, last week I attended a Homeless Services Oversight Council committee. And currently they are doing their enumeration, which is a head count of the homeless people within the county. I think today they address facilities like ECHO and the women's shelter and what have you. And tomorrow they'll have a group of volunteers where they'll be down in the creeks and in the camps and what have you. They expect to have some different numbers this year because of different standards of reporting, so it should be kind of interesting. I was told that within 7 to 10 days after the enumeration that we'll have those numbers. I believe last year there was 3,800 plus homeless people in the county, and about 1,800 of them were children. And roughly, I think 45% of those are in the North County here, and my opinion, we don't get the representation that we should to take care of the problem. Also, it appears that part of the homeless problem is due to mental health, substance abuse, and what have you, and I think you're going to be hearing more conversations on that because I think that's part of the cure for homelessness or to help it. And then on February the 6th, I'll be sitting on a panel which is sponsored by the Chartered Network, which is Brad Pomerantz. I think you're going to go down there for an interview. And the topic is going to be homeless youth on the Central Coast. So that appears to be becoming a problem, or at least we'll find out about it. And I'll report back to you whatever I hear on the enumeration in this panel hearing. And that's all I have to report.
Thank you. Councilman Moreno.
As Councilmember Kelly said, I will be with Brad Pomerantz on February 7th. I'm not sure when the air times will be, but sometime shortly after that, I guess. And our finance committee, we will be getting together in the near future, so looking forward to working with Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant and Wade and Rochelle and I believe Joe So now you've given us a lot to go off. This will be obviously a big year starting out, and looking forward to working with all of you.
Support that program.
I think that he was looking for that statement. I believe that, and Councilmember Kelly could probably help, they attended a public meeting there, I think, at the Carlton.
Yes, we've been to a couple of meetings, and I think that Jerry wants to make sure that we don't put our head in the hole in the ground and think it's just going to go away. And it's my opinion, too, that it needs to be up at the top, and we need to talk about it so it doesn't disappear, and we need to generate the interest within the community and gain the support for the lighthouse, because we do have a problem. And I think I see that the city, or some people, they have their own intervention, and part of the intervention is you have to identify that you do have the problem, whether you're the abuser or what have you. And I think this group did finally come out and admit that we do have a problem in town. And I think it's part of the responsibility of the city council, and I'm sure we're 100% behind them to support them in any way we can. And part of that might be to be talking about it a little bit more, because we do have a good position here to do that. And I think that's Jerry's concern, is that we do keep an interest in it.
Thank you for that clarification. I'm wondering if we need to have a council appointee that goes to those meetings, perhaps?
Well, we are, of course, pretty involved. And I would say, too, Jerry may have forgotten, I've got a 30-year history in health and human services. Started out working in the counseling field with substance abuse, what used to be the county drug program administrator of all programs and treatment in that area for years before mental health administrator. And I've, too, as many of us have been involved with the Lighthouse program, Brian Sturdivant and I, sitting on the city schools committee with two of the school board members, specifically Don Clickard, who's very involved with this, we've had opportunity to engage and see how we could facilitate. And of course, we have been involved with our police chief, and our police department is very much involved in this program. I think it would be good to see if there's any areas we can be more involved. I do think every one of us has been involved individually, and I think if there's a need for a formal city relationship that hasn't been asked for yet, I think they're looking at a much more comprehensive approach, everyone taking some responsibility in the community. But I think it'd be a good primarily school base to see if we'll put that on the agenda again and just see if there's anything else we could do to help.
And I think the fire department is actively involved with a program part of this. And I'm going to attend just as a concerned citizen, and I'll be more than glad to put my input into it if anybody desires it. I think it's, having been a policeman years ago, I've seen the results in the street, what happens, and I stand behind the program 100%, and I want to help out as much as I can with it. So
yeah, they are looking for volunteers, and you could sign up like my wife and I have to play a role in whatever you would like to do. But yeah, we should keep in touch.
Now, something to think about. Possibly you might want to think about maybe just from the council a statement of support and encouragement for our community to help get involved, that kind of thing, just an encouragement, positive, and let them know that we're where we stand.
I think that's a good idea. I would think if we did put some statement together that the council does support the Lighthouse deal, I think in some of their documentation, what they put out, I think that would be a really impressive. I think that was good.
That should be the minimum we do, and we can look to see what else is needed. But it sounds like, Councilman Kelly, you're going to draft that up for us, and we'll take a look at it. Thank you. Any other?
I can't let one more thing go.
Well, please. We're on a roll.
Jerry brought to mind what he always had some comments about restaurants, and so he left one out. Oh. So I thought we should talk about the new Hoover's, this where the A-Town Deli used to be, but you can go and get your omelet there that they used to have. It's actually very nice.
Very good. Thank
and
you.
And I drove down by the old Players, and that remodel job is coming along quite well. Mm-hmm. Looks like it's going to be a pretty impressive building down there. And I'll tag along on the new A-Town location. It's,
yeah, nice.
It's good.
I think that concludes. Any other staff last input on that? We will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.